All right, we start hour number three by having a conversation with a senior NBA writer at Sports Illustrated, also a SiriusXM NBA analyst, also co-host of the Crossover NBA Show with Chris Mannix and Howard Beck, also the pride of UC Davis. We UCers stick together. He's a good friend of the program. He is Howard Beck. What's going on, Howard? Good to have you back. How are you?
Doing well, Romy. How are you? It's the UC Davis part that is always the most important part of the intro. I appreciate that.
I love that. No, I appreciate you saying that, too. Much respect coming from a UC Santa Barbara Gaucho grad. All right, so we're almost a month in, Howard, to the season. The biggest storyline of the year has been James Harden trying to force his way out of Houston and COVID. So let me start there. If you're Adam Silver, how are you feeling about that and about the start of the season? How concerned is the commissioner right about now?
You got to think that he's fairly concerned. This has been, this last week in particular, the wave of games that they have had to postpone, the number of teams that have had their rosters just devastated, not so much by COVID cases, but by contact tracing. It's tough. You know, they rolled out the schedule one half at a time, right? When they planned out the season, they said, we're doing the first 36 games. We will tell you when the second 36 will be afterward, because they wanted to make sure that they were flexible, that whatever happened in these first 36 games, they could adjust as necessary, and that proved to be the wise approach. And I got to say, to some extent, Jim, it's important to note that, you know, while there have been COVID cases, there have been players getting sick, Karl Anthony Towns, the latest, and that one's heartbreaking for all kinds of other reasons, but I don't think they've had necessarily as much of a COVID problem as they've had a contact tracing problem. And to their credit, they're going very strictly by their protocols to keep the league from having a bigger outbreak. But by erring on the side of caution, by being as careful as possible, they're having to postpone games. And I don't think it's gotten to a tipping point where you now have to say, well, we got to, you know, stop, pause the season and reevaluate everything. They're, you know, they've changed some rules. They're trying to tighten it up a little bit and see if they can weather the storm. But, you know, look, you and I both know this. This is not an NBA problem. This is a U.S. problem. It's a global problem, but, you know, particularly here, we are, you know, in the midst of the worst part of this pandemic in terms of infection rate, and the NBA, like any other sector, is not immune from it. So I think they're doing their best, but I got to think Adam Silver's been a bit nervous as well, given the way the last week or so has gone.
Agreed. Howard Beck is joining us. He's a senior NBA writer for Sports Illustrated. All right, Howard, what about James Harden? Now, you've had a few days to think about this. What are your thoughts on the way things ended for him in Houston, and how should he be remembered there?
Look, I think, and we saw this with Vince Carter, right? Go back, like, people have forgotten, especially the younger fans. Vince Carter's exit from Toronto once upon a time was really ugly. And everybody who remembers watching at the time, it looked like Vince Carter had basically just stopped playing, stopped caring entirely, and it got kind of ugly. And then he got traded to New Jersey, and suddenly he was reborn and you know, resumed being the great player that he was. And we remember him now very fondly. He became a respected veteran, a mentor, a great all-around leader and role model in this game. And we don't think too much. Raptor fans probably remember very vividly, but most people just kind of look at Vince Carter for what he accomplished and what he meant to the various franchises he played for. James Harden, it's ugly right now. And if you're a Rockets fan, it had to be frustrating, heartbreaking, infuriating, all of it. But he gave them 8 pretty great seasons, a couple of conference finals, a lot of great moments. And, yeah, couldn't deliver the championship, or maybe, you know, you want to argue that it was fate, injuries, not enough talent around him, the roster build, whatever. That was a pretty great era for Rockets basketball. And so I think over time, when the hard feelings subside, I think, you know, his Rockets tenure will be remembered, even in Houston, for the high highs and not the messy exit. But it was messy, and I don't think it was altogether necessary. I think there's... You know, everybody comes to that point in their careers, superstars in particular in the last 10 years, where you say, you know what, it's just not working out here. And if you're a pending free agent, you leave in free agency. And if you're, you know, a year short of that, maybe you tell the team, look, trade me before you lose me for nothing. In Harden's case, he really started that ball rolling way ahead of when he could have been a free agent. And that part of it made it a little bit, I think, tougher. And I think the way he applied pressure and the way he handled himself was not great. None of these cases are analogous to each other. They all kind of stand on their own. I think Harden's is at the unfortunate end of the spectrum.
Right, and for those who missed it, Howard, he shows up with the Nets, and then he goes off immediately, a triple-double, 32, 12, 14, and four steals, and in fact became the first player in NBA history with a 30-point triple-double in his debut with that team. So that was a little more salt in that wound for the Rockets and their fans. What about Kyrie Irving, Howard? He's reportedly going to miss tonight's game against Milwaukee. How do you see Harden, Irving, and Kevin Durant all working together in the event that they all work together?
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying for some time and before this trade even happened that I didn't think of all the places that Harden could land, this was not the ideal scenario to me. I thought his best fit was Philly. I thought Harden and Embiid together would be seamless. And yeah, that's two stars instead of three, so maybe it's not as high of a ceiling in terms of the talent that you can roll out on a given day. But I'm not convinced, Jim, that three high-usage, primary ball handler, primary scorer types of players can fit that seamlessly. This is not Pearson, Garnett, and Ray Allen in 2007, where they had, you know, maybe a little overlap, but very, a really complementary set of skills, the three of them. And not, you know, they took steps back. They all had to sacrifice. But they weren't all three primary ball handlers. And this is different. Durant and Kyrie Irving and James Harden are used to operating a certain way. And it was really nice the other night. Durant and Harden together were seamless. And I think those two plus a great set of role players around them could actually be a championship caliber team on its own. How Kyrie Irving fits whenever he gets back is, I think, a really big question. Because Durant's already shown, you know, he could play with Russ and Russ's high usage, you know, tendencies in Oklahoma. He could go to the Warriors and fit in. So I don't think Durant is a question. I'm not sure about Harden, and I'm not sure about Kyrie. They're both used to playing a certain way. And you assume that because Harden did force his way to Brooklyn, that was the top of his list. You assume that intrinsic to that is, if I get there, I'm going to be willing to play a little differently. And I assume that those are conversations he's had, not just with the organization, but with Durant and Kyrie Irving. So we'll see. We'll see. They have other issues too, Jim. I mean, I don't know if they've got enough defense. They traded Jared Allen. So, you know, there goes their best big man defender. And, you know, the roster, which was one of the deepest in the league to start the season, is now looking a little thin after the big three.
We were talking to Howard Beck. All right, Howard, what about out here? The thinking coming into this season was that the Lakers would be most impacted by the short offseason, and they probably have to limit minutes early on, yet they're 11-3 right now, Howard. They're number one in defensive efficiency. They're number five in offensive efficiency. What do you make of their start?
A couple things. One is that when you're a great team, the talent still rules. Like, you know, this is just further proof that, oh, hey, the Lakers are really, really good. You know, and besides that, we spent, you know, a couple weeks in the offseason saying, wow, look, they won the championship, and then they got better by bringing in Dennis Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell and the rest of these guys. So no surprise. I think, to your point, the quick turnaround, the short turnaround, and the fact that everybody still looks fresh and sharp, part of it's probably the fact that, you know, they didn't lose any momentum. You know, a shorter offseason means it maybe doesn't take as long to get back in a rhythm with each other, even with the new pieces being incorporated. But if there's going to be a price to pay because of the short turnaround and the lack of time to recover and this season being a little compressed, we won't know that impact until later, right? It's going to be, if there's some week that comes up where all of a sudden guys are looking like they're dragging, or, you know, guys start getting hurt, that's when you're going to say, you know what, this is where it's catching up to them. But to start the season, it's like you pick up where you left off, and everybody's in sync. So they look great. They're the favorites to repeat for a reason. But as I say, if there's a price to pay for the quick turnaround, we probably won't see it until a little bit further into the season.
Howard Beck joining us. Howard, before I let you go, I want to ask you about one more thing. I want to talk to you about Steph Curry. You and Chris Mannix were talking about him and his contract situation on a recent episode of The Crossover. How do you see Golden State handling his future?
Yeah, it's fascinating. And our colleague at SI, Michael Pena, wrote a piece about should the Warriors, and, you know, it's like heresy to even throw this out there, should the Warriors think about what they could get for Steph because of where they were standing, you know, a few weeks ago, and they've looked a little bit better of late, but they're in a tough spot. And, you know, waiting another year for Klay Thompson to come back, not knowing exactly what kind of condition he'll be in when he returns, can you make another run? And I don't think, you know, it's more of a thought exercise. I don't think Steph Curry is seriously a candidate to be traded. But it's an interesting thing to think about as he, you know, nears, you know, the whatever the tail end of his prime might be, and he still looks like he's firmly in his prime. But, you know, what are your obligations as a franchise to your superstar player? You're obligated to, I think, get the most out of them every year, to put the best talent around them that you possibly can, to make sure that every year that they are an elite MVP-type player, that you are contending, that you're doing right by them. And the Warriors absolutely have done that. And circumstances have gone against them, right? Durant's injury, Klay's injury, Klay's other injury. And the good news for them is Wiseman's looked really good so far. They've got Minnesota's pick in this draft. They'll have their own pick. If they fall in the lottery, that could be two really high picks again. They should be able to reload pretty quickly. And if Klay Thompson recovers well, then Steph Curry is going to be able to contend again while still in the Golden State Warriors uniform. And the thought exercise of, gee, should they consider trading him and what could they get and how would that work? Maybe that never has to really come to pass in a real way.
I mean, as a quick follow, I wonder, are there certain guys, Howard, and would Steph be one of them, where you just essentially get a contract for life because of what you've meant to the franchise?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. And yet that was part of the story that Michael Pena did as well was, yeah, are you going to give him a max extension at some point here that's going to take him into his mid to late 30s? I think you do it. I do think that when a guy has meant as much to a franchise as Steph Curry has to the Warriors, you don't think about, gee, on the back end, it's going to be a tough contract and it's going to weigh us down or whatever. You just do whatever you need to honor what that player has meant to your franchise, to your city, or to the entire Bay Area in that case. So I have no doubt that as long as everybody feels good about, listen, this is where he's going to finish his career, and if Steph doesn't have any thoughts ever about wanting to go finish like in his hometown of Charlotte or somewhere else or chase a ring somewhere else, then I don't think they'll have any problem settling on a number or maxing him out again, whatever it may be, because that's how the best franchises, the classy franchises, operate, and the Warriors have always been that.
They always have been that. He's a senior NBA writer at Sports Illustrated, Sirius XM NBA analyst, co-host of the Crossover NBA Show with Chris Mannix and Howard Beck, and as we mentioned, the pride of UC Davis. Howard, thanks so much. Always good to have you on. I appreciate your time, as always.
Appreciate you, Romy. Thank you.
You too, Howard. Thank you. Appreciate you very much.